One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we spend probably more time than is normal staring at old picture postcards, front and back, and along with my guests, try to understand what it was that caused them to keep hold of these ephemeral cardboard oblongs. As I say, each time I welcome two guests, and it's their postcards that act as tiny prompts to send us hurtling towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson, and I'm delighted to say that today my guests are money coach and podcaster Martha Lawton, and singer and broadcaster Ian Shaw. Ian and Martha, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Hi, it's great to be
Lovely
here.
Lovely to be here.
Now, Martha Lawton works in financial education and money coaching, helping thousands of people to think a bit more clearly about their finances. And it is this quest to understand and unpick our complicated relationship with money that's led her to Squanderlust, the podcast she hosts about that very subject. And Martha joins us today bearing a 530 postmark, zip code. What is that, Martha?
I think you could call it either of those things. I can't remember the exact terminology in the language for that country, but it's a Japanese postcode.
Right. From, and why does that mean so much to you?
Well, when I was 19, I left home effectively from a tiny village in rural Oxfordshire and moved for 6 months to the outskirts of the suburbs of Osaka, where I was the only white person for several miles around. In fact, probably the only foreigner for several miles around.
Wow.
Had a huge impact on my life to just to be completely displaced in that way, but also to find that these people on the other side of the world, who I was told before I went were so different and you'll never relate to them, were just more people. They were just more people, and they were every bit as human and relatable and kind and interesting and normal and funny and petty and frustrating and lovely as anywhere else.
Very good, very good. And this stays with you, this time you spent there?
Absolutely, yeah. It started 7 years of my life really dedicated to learning Japanese, to just being really obsessed with Japanese culture and food and art and not all the things that a lot of people seem to get really into, the kind of the goth Lolita thing and the anime and the game and the video games and that kind of stuff. I was never really into all of those things, but sort of daily life in Japan just really interested me, and I really enjoyed learning the language. And after 7 years I moved on and started doing other things, and that was partly when I shifted into learning more about personal finance and money and so on. But for 7 years of my life, it really sort of absorbed me a lot and had a big impact on how I see the world.
I'll bet. Now, Martha, do you still send postcards?
Ooh, yes.
Thank goodness.
Only to my mum and dad, but
good
yes.
Enough. who could be more important?
Well, exactly. And who would be more disappointed if they didn't get one?
So when do they receive cards from you?
Oh, when I go on holiday. So if my husband and I go on holiday at some point in the holiday, probably a day or two before we come home, I'll suddenly remember that my mum will be disappointed if she doesn't get a postcard. So in the manner of postcards, she will get one 2 or 3 days after we get back.
Yes, when all the stories have been told. But it's still nice to receive, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think there's something in the choosing of the image on the postcard that is very personal and very lovely.
It can be quite agony, actually, kind of choosing the right one, I find.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a sort of traipsing from shop to shop that can end up happening.
I find myself saying the most terrible things, like, we won't waste that tasteful one on her. I'm just being honest.
No, it's fair. It's fair. I would never say that about my mum, though.
No, I wasn't talking about your mother. I'd like to get that on the record. Now, you will know Ian Shaw, I'm sure. You should know Ian Shaw as a multi-award-winning, highly prized jazz singer in this country. You may have heard him on record at Ronnie Scott's or hosting the Ronnie Scott's radio show on Jazz FM. And most recently, you may well have heard, and if you haven't, you definitely should hear, his brilliant autobiographical podcast, Not Even Music. And Ian comes to us today with an SE1 postmark.
Indeed, yes. I'm just looking at an actual phone box, which looks like it's 1979. It's right opposite my living room balcony, next to the cathedral. So I feel very much in London now.
Tied in.
Yes, yeah.
So why ST1? Why that bit of London?
SE1. I've always lived in this neighbourhood, really. I went to King's College on the Strand and I found a very good greasy spoon on Kennington Road. And I just mooched around and found Lower Marsh.
These things stay with us.
Egg on toast, 18, yeah. 50 pence, I remember it was. Ooh. And I just stayed. I always wanted to be here, so I'm here. I've moved quite a few times in this area. It's a fascinating part of London. It's, you know, Lower Marsh and the Old Vic and beautiful history, lots of Georgian stuff and lots of missing teeth because of the, you know, the Blitz. It's just great. I love it here.
Yes, and sort of slightly unrespectable and associated with show business, actually, I think.
Yeah,
the old days.
Filthy dirty. Super pandemic. I can get to the filth of Soho in about 19 minutes if I put a pace on.
Really? What, on foot?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
And slower coming home again.
A waddle.
So, Ian, when did you last send a postcard?
Well, not for a long time, I don't think. And again, as Martha was saying, definitely it was to my parents who are both gone now. So it's been a while. I sent a bereavement card to a friend of mine last week, in fact, and I knew that I was coming to talk to you. So I had the same feeling. I wrote it in the shop, in the post office, and I had that same feeling of trying to sort of, well, first of all, to pick out the card. And I completely hear what you're saying about the choice is everything, isn't it? It's almost like choosing, I don't know, alternative milk or something. It takes me ages to pick a card for a birthday or something. And I remember the feeling of writing to my parents as I was writing to my lovely friend Faith, whose husband sadly fell prey to COVID. So I had a feeling, the same feeling that I got years and years ago, trying to convey emotions on a tiny sort of 3x6 card. It was quite extraordinary, and I knew I was coming to talk to you, so it meant a lot.
Oh, well, so thanks for sharing that little
contemporary
thing. It's very interesting.
Oh, happy day. Sorry.
Oh, yes. But it's true. It's surprising how powerful a message you can get across on a small piece of card, actually. I think it's when I read old cards, sometimes the messages leap out as if the person was standing in front of me. And that's, I don't know, it's testament to that it can work. We're quite good as a species at communicating.
I think we are. And also it's sort of, it made me think how ridiculous. I mean, I'm 58 years old. It made me feel how ridiculous it was to choose the right emoji on a WhatsApp message or something. And I just thought, this is such a blissful thing, trying to cram everything that I want to say onto a card, you know. So this postcards malarkey is really important because it brings back so many feelings of being in the moment and real, and also the innocence of without sounding too cruddy or old or sentimental, the innocence of the past. How sad.
If only the past was innocent, Ian.
Sadly.
What you were just saying kind of said to me something about how the images on the front of a postcard are almost to the text. They're like the body language of the text.
Yes,
somehow.
They are.
Well, they can be. I think some people are probably blissful. They just pick up a card and send it.
Well, some people are like that with their body language as well.
I suppose so, yes. But I do worry. I worry more negatively than positively, actually. It's more like, will this send the wrong message, rather than this is a thing of beauty? But I don't
And
know.
That sort of confidence of, and we are here, and then there's a blue Byroad cross
in a minuscule
hotel.
Yes, yeah, I love those interventions. I heard an art historian refer to them as interventions. And I thought, oh, I love them. And of course, that makes the card, the image which is mass-produced, personal. Mm. So it's like the personal bit from the back of the card creeping across onto the wrong side. Mm. The message has been, it's been breached. That thing has been breached. Mm. I spend too long thinking about these things, as you know.
Thank goodness.
Well, yes. So other people don't have to. Well, before we see and hear the cards that Ian and Martha have brought along, I've got a quick one of mine. And this is a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter and in the book and stuff. An old card, and I've just taken a bit of the message. So we're not in the studio today. We're recording this remotely. So Martha and Ian have got crib sheets. So they can see the cards on a screen or on a piece of paper or something. And this is a card of the Great Orm in Llandudno.
Wow.
And it's a card made by Valentine's, who are a publisher from Dundee, and it's got a lovely decal edge. You know when the edges are all done like a doily? This was sent, it's hard to see the date, certainly in the 60s. It was sent to Newcastle upon Tyne, to Mr. Smith, and it's from someone who signs their name in a way you can't read, so you don't know who it's from. And it just says, "A horrid man banged into my car yesterday and smashed it up a bit, but I managed to drive into Llandudno." So, just a little moment from their holiday. But not
well,
entirely.
I hope it was my father, because I grew up in Llandudno.
Well, I wondered if we might have a Welsh connection for you there, Ian. So it could be.
We used to use our auntie's summer house in Winchland Avenue, which is on the west shore. So that view is very familiar to me.
So you could have been walking on the other side of the street when this card was sent, perhaps.
Glorious happenstance, yeah.
as a small child. Or maybe you heard the car smash.
Do you know, thinking back...
don't let the truth get in the way. Another quick one. This is a card of Lou, L-O-O. Where's Lou? Is it in... It's in Cornwall, I think.
Cornwall, yeah.
Yes, much hilarity to be had with the name. This is a multi-view, so four images. The river, the East Beach, harbour entrance and the harbour again. They ran out of things to show us in Loo, I think. Mm-hmm. And this is from 1963. And it was sent to Master R. Elliot, who was at the Scouts camp in Washbury in Bodmin. So they sent the card in the knowledge the post would get there while he was still at Scouts camp, which is good. Oh, and this is another one inspired with you in mind, Ian. You're in luck. It says, yeah, what's it going to be about? Who knows? It says, "Dear Richard, I hope you're enjoying yourself. You are having lovely weather." That's a twist in itself. Normally it's, "We're having lovely weather." "You're having lovely weather." It says, "Your mouse is very tame. He took a biscuit out of my hand this morning."
Aww.
And I'm thinking, is this a, you know, like a house mouse or a pet mouse? And then it says, "Mine is not quite so tame yet. We're keeping them indoors as the shed is very hot. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. Love, Susan."
That's so glorious.
That's sweet. I think they're pet mice. I think they're pet mice that they both got.
I think so, yes.
It may be I think a girl to her brother, perhaps. I'm not sure. But I know you had an issue with mice. It was in an episode of your podcast.
Yes, well remembered. Yes, I had a mouse that I called him Keyring because he reminded me of the very first thing that I bought from a Blackpool holiday shop. You know those ones where you get pebbles that really do look like pebbles and they're in fact just sugared sweeties. And I remember really, really wanting this mouse, and it was £1.25. Hmm. And Mum and Dad said, "Well, we've paid through the nose to go and see Cilla Black and the Bachelors." So, and at the end of the holiday, I got this little mouse, and I've had a mouse during lockdown. Sadly, now no more because I released him into the nearest park. But I got this very elaborate kind of amber-coloured plastic thing with the sort of bang, ding, you're in sort of humanely, hopefully. And I let him go in the park after 6 weeks, I think, or maybe more, of him coming out and sort of just very, very boldly, brazenly watching the telly with me. And I even fed him, which is probably completely wrong.
And there was just one?
Gosh.
Because they say if you've got one, you've actually got 20.
Oh, no. Oh, God, I thought that was rats. Well, never mind. Well, it's this big Georgian house, so there's a complete existence, another strata probably of all sorts of creatures.
The mice are just talking to the ghosts.
But he ran back in. He sort of scuttled out of the thing, and then he ran back into the trap, which had Nutella in it.
Oh.
So I thought, what are you doing? This is just getting very dark now. So I just went for a little walk and left the trap there. And when I came back, he'd gone. So that was
that's good.
The mouse thing. But yeah, not a pet, really. But I like to think it was in the lonely first sort of 6 weeks of lockdown.
We were all going slightly crazy. So these things gain more meaning than they should, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I should remind everyone at home, images of the cars we've been looking at and we're going to be looking at are all on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see we're not making it up. Now, Ian and Martha, you've come along today, you've grabbed from your drawers and boxes and bookcases some postcards. Martha, let's start with you. What's the first card you'd like to discuss with us?
So the first card I want to talk about is a card from Jenkins Key in Bantham, which is on the south coast of Devon.
Oh, and, I thought it was China.
Well, there is a rather oriental-looking building on there, isn't there?
Yeah, I guess it's a little thatched sort of boathouse place on Jenkins Key.
It is idyllic, isn't it?
It is beautiful. Bantham is a beautiful village. It's very idyllic, has this stunning white sand beach. My family and I used to stay there for 2 weeks every summer for several years when I was a child. I think we went there for 4, maybe 5 years running. And Jenkins Key, in fact, this postcard looks as if it was taken from the bottom of the garden of the house that we used to stay in.
Really?
Ooh, yeah, lovely. Which is one reason why I really love it.
So you must know that view perfectly.
I know that view really, really well. I've been down to Jenkins Key quite a few times, and there's another little key where we used to go and catch crabs that's opposite that. I mean, haul them out of the water with a piece of string and a bacon rind on the end of it, not any other get your mind out the gutter, I was 8. this actual postcard came to me by the most roundabout route. So it was sent in 1989, and I didn't send it. It was sent by my grandmother to a friend of hers who was in a convent. And how my grandmother got it back again, I have no idea. But it was in my grandmother's effects when she passed away. So, So I nabbed it because it had this sentimental value of relating to this place that I'm very, very fond of.
And from
my grandmother. I mean, there are lots of reasons why I'm very fond of Bantham, but apart from the fact that there's this sort of beautiful view and it's a really lovely beach, it's also, it's this idyllic place with a bit of a dark undertone. It's got sort of some really interesting things about it. So the first thing is that in spite of looking very beautiful, Bantham is on an estuary. And if you swim in the wrong place, it has these corkscrew tides, these riptides that will pull you under the sea. So it's sort of all beautiful and cutesy on the outside. And then underneath, you have to be really careful about where you're only swimming in the right places because the nature will get you.
Yeah, yeah. That'll teach you to do your wild swimming.
Yeah, you better swim between the flags.
Did you swim, Martha? Did you swim there?
I did used to swim there. I used to swim, but I was very careful, obviously, to only swim within the flags and not in the estuary at all. But yeah, no, when the tide is turning, it's a dangerous place. But it's also in the estuary, there's this tiny little island called Burr Island.
Right.
And Burr Island is famous because the Burr Island Hotel is where Agatha Christie wrote a bunch of her stories and set two of her novels in the Burr Island Hotel and the surrounding area.
Is that right?
So there's this incredible Art Deco hotel, and one day I will go there and stay there.
Yeah, you have to.
And the Burr Island Hotel, you know, look it up. It's got all this kind of incredibly glamorous Art Deco. They've preserved it all.
This is a great image of Britain, really, isn't it? Beautiful thatched cottage, beautiful estuary.
Yeah.
But just below the surface, the waters will suck you down. The murders are being written.
Yeah.
Welcome to 2020.
This is where we are.
Well, and 1930 as well, remember? So
I think twas ever thus.
Twas ever thus, indeed, indeed.
There's a strange sort of, it looks like a sort of a miniature Sydney Opera House on the bottom right-hand corner. What is that?
I think, the bottom right, it's a bird. That's a gull. Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Ian's a city dweller.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely, lovely place.
Actually, that's clever as well, because that's a bit of foreground interest. They've had to wait for that bird. They probably waited for hours.
Yeah.
No Photoshop. And what sort of thing did the message say? I don't want to intrude on it. But...
Oh, no, it's fine. I'm happy to read the message. It's actually very... acceptable for public reading. It says,
I'm glad it's not disgusting.
No, indeed. From my grandmother to a nun. No, precisely. It's not disgusting. No, it's fine.
You never know.
My grandmother, she did have an entertaining sense of humour, but she was, on this occasion, she was suitable. It says, having sweltered for the last 2 months, the weather changed, and the day after we arrived and this evening is cold and wet and blowing a gale. I am disappointed for Sally and the girls, that'd be my mother and us, who want to swim and sunbathe. We hope for better things tomorrow. Love, Mary.
Very nice. Very nice.
Very, very nice.
Well, I think we should all take that as our motto. We hope for better things tomorrow. That's
just zooming. Is that a nudist beach?
No, it's not. No, there was no nudism that I was aware of.
I think you're fine.
Have things changed?
maybe. I wouldn't put it past them.
How wonderful!
Very good. No, that's really nice. I like the sort of double layers of meaning in there, and this strange journey that I mean, sometimes it's a very sad journey that these things come back to us. I mean, I think we might be talking about that more later, but the sense that the two things. One is that there's a sort of homing instinct to these cards. They come back to you because you sent them, or in this case, your grandmother sent them, but also because they survive. Paper and cardboard are quite resilient. They unless you set light to them or throw them in the bath, they're probably going to survive.
Yeah.
Right, Ian, let's move on to your first card. What should we be looking at here?
Gosh. Is that Amsterdam? It is, isn't it?
You tell us.
Yeah, that is Amsterdam. Yeah, my poor father, as if going to London at 17 wasn't enough, at 19 I found myself playing in piano bars in Europe. Amsterdam, mind yourself there, lad. and it's a card, well, it's a very, you know, it's a very Amsterdam view. There's beautiful houses and the canal, but it's a card from me, clearly thrilled that I was in Amsterdam and I had a gig in a bar, in a very kind of
silly
bar, playing the piano and singing. And it says, "Dear all," that's my sister and my parents, "sitting in my kitchen in the flat, I'm writing you a letter bit by bit, but it's 12th day holiday tomorrow, so I won't be able to buy envelopes. Mm-hmm. Till Thursday. Everything here is so incredibly clean and beautiful. The staff at the gig, bottom left corner overleaf," so there's that whole kind of sense of place thing on the actual body of the card, "are lovely. Written with a posh pen found in a phone box."
Good detail.
Which dates it, doesn't it? I'm in the best club in Amsterdam. My shower broke down the other day. This was, I guess, in the flat that they gave me above the club. Two men came in the morning while I was in bed. They must have farted 20 times and they pinched my lighter.
No shortage of detail here.
No. And then the part that makes me really go mushy was, I found your birthday present, Jill. Really excited. That's my sister. And we shared a massive love for David Bowie. And how sad is that? When I went to Europe, I found that bootlegs existed and they weren't illegal. You could buy them in shops. So I found David Bowie Serious Moonlight Tour, a live bootleg, a double, and it cost me probably about 20 euros then, which was an enormous amount of money for somebody working in a piano bar. And I put, hope you like it. Hope to see you all soon, love, Ian.
So you bought that for your sister?
I did. I packed it so carefully in my suitcase. I was convinced that the record was going to break, and she was completely over the moon and still has it. And that's the first time I've seen that postcard. I said to you, Tom, didn't I? I had to get my sister to ransack my parents' boxes, which are stored in my sister's garage, and all of these postcards that I used to very diligently send from. I did piano bars for about 5 years all over the world, and I learnt my craft, I suppose you could say. And I did live, because I went to so many different places, you know, Spain. Where did I go? I went to Cuba, New York.
Wow.
It was an incredible stroke of luck. I found this agent called Jack Fallon, Can of Variety, this old Canadian bass player that set up an agency in North London in Palmer's Green. And I remember auditioning for him, and I was a bit of a punk. So I went down the steps of this very posh nightclub when there was a grand piano, peacockly dressed. And he's like, you got a passport? And I think I did some Billy Joel or something. And he said, no, you're ideal for this piano entertainer thing, which is basically you sitting in a corner for 4 hours, not taking even a wee break, trying to entertain people with songs that they know to encourage them to drink more at these various quite grim places, I suppose, that were interested only in selling alcohol. So it was an extraordinary time for me, and it really sort of made me into the man that my father always wanted.
It must have been a second education in the business, certainly. Wow.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. And I have fond memories of it, and also very kind of bleak memories of it sometimes, because I was desperately lonely and, you know, in the middle of southern Sweden in a place called Borås, which was a moated small town. And there was a ghastly hotel, some 1970s hotel in the middle of it. And I was playing the piano there while businessmen had their dinner. So I did four shifts and then ate with the staff, which was the best bit of the gig, actually.
Yeah.
Getting to know the staff.
Because this is not like going on tour with a band. You were on your own.
Yeah, I was completely on my own. And I still do that show. I still do solo shows because it's easy. I can do what I like. I can improvise. I'm not a slave to my band or an orchestra if I'm working with an orchestra. So it still reminds me of that kind of trying to get the room on your side, you know, which thankfully for the last, I suppose, 25, 30 years, I haven't had to do, because people know what they're getting when they...
They've booked to see you. It's different, isn't it?
Not some weirdo with a money can sit in the corner.
You're not getting in the way of their drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that must be a moment you cross in your career, is it? That you stop being something that's an irritant and start being something people actually want.
There's a cream for everything, Tom. Yes. I suppose, it was the comedy circuit, because I found myself accidentally on the stand-up comedy circuit working with, you know, Julian Clary, Joe Brand, Mark Steele. I mean, I had a ball singing sort of vaguely political, funny songs with a guitarist. So that sort of pushed me into a bit more of a listening room, you know. And also that really, really, really kind of was a tough training, because you go on as music in those days it was called the alternative cabaret circuit, which was a sort of anti sort of government, anti-Thatcher stance. So you go on after that with a bit of music, and it's like, yeah, you know, time to go to the toilet, everybody. So it was from the frying pan literally into the fire of the London comedy scene. Yeah,
very good. It's a nice card though. And it was kept. That's the point. It wasn't sort of, oh, thanks for that, we'll throw it away. People do hold on to these things. It meant something when you sent it.
Yes, it did. I did. Weirdly, I don't have any cards, any postcards in my house in London.
Apologies, listener, for the pair of dogs have found their way into my house. Well, that's very nice. I love that shot. And I know that this is the kind of card that when I put things like this on Twitter, there are people who always look at all the cars and argue about the different models of which car is which. So there's a this night view on the side of the canal. They parked quite carefully. And the cars look older. When was this then? Late 80s?
No, this would have been, excuse me, it would have been 84, maybe 85.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the cars look older, though, don't they?
They do.
Maybe it was an old photograph at the time.
Yeah, those are definitely 70s cars, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. Those are the days.
Yeah. Were they, though?
No, of course they weren't. Of course they weren't. These are the days. We just don't know it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you for sharing that one, Ian. I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is this is from my favourite publisher of postcards. This is a company called Constance, who were based in Littlehampton, and then later years, I think they're actually based in Streatham. And it's a card of Tenby, so another Welsh card. It's a multi-view, lovely blue. The whole thing is blue. It's blue sky, blue sea, blue cliffs for some reason, but it's all blue. I like these Constance cards. I like the austerity of the black bed that they put the words on the front. For some reason, that appeals to me. Not being too jolly. And the thing I liked about this card is, I don't know if you'll see the wry side to this. I think it's kind of interesting. It says, Hilda and Frank have done some beautiful paintings. They really need another room for all their work. To me, it just... I don't know. It sounds a bit like, I wish they'd put them in another room. But I don't think that's what it means at all. But just for me, I just... I don't know.
Okay, that's excellent.
They really do need another house to put them in. They do need a shed to put them in. They need a skip.
It doesn't spoil... Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I went on holiday a few years ago to a house that was, I think, used sometimes for an artist's retreat.
Ah.
And there was some spectacularly terrible art all the way through the house. And in particular, something with a sad clown on it looking over the dinner table, which was,
Well, they really did need another room for those.
They did. And what the owners had done to get another room for it was to put it all in the guest house and then guests deal with it.
Yeah, so they kicked it out of their house and chucked it into... Good idea.
And chucked it into the house they were letting out.
Yes.
And gave us all something to talk about.
Good strategy, actually. We've got your paintings in pride of place in the other building.
Exactly.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are singer Ian Shaw and money coach Martha Lawton. Now, a surprise, we've received a postcard. The postcard is of Trier in Germany, and it comes from Mrs. J. Higgs, and she says that the answers are 1, Holy Island, and 2, Gertrude Jekyll. Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Higgs, they're the wrong answers. Now, Martha, back to you. Yes. What's the second card you got for us? This looks rather alarming looking card.
It is.
Yeah, so this is, it's actually one of a small stack that I've kept. And it shows a young woman who has dive-bombed into some water, and there's lots of sort of bubbles. It's shot from underwater, so there's lots of bubbles you can see rising to the surface around her, and her hair is streaming upwards through the water, and her clothes are sort of gathered round her where she's got her knees tucked up.
It is beautiful.
It is stunning. Yeah, it's student art.
Ah.
And I have a collection of these postcards, most of which are some kind of student art, and some of them are corporate art. So I've got one which is an eye where the eyelashes are all palm trees, and that's for advertising bounty bars.
They came in search of paradise.
Exactly.
And they found it.
Yeah. And there are some charity ones and various others, but they all have these quite striking images on them. And I used to stick them up on the walls in my halls of residence in university, because you move into your university halls and it's like you get a little sort of prison cell room with a hard, narrow, creaky bed. What my Japanese teacher used to call a student morality bed. It's just too small and uncomfortable for two people.
The SMB. And
that's the one. And I used to get these postcards from bars. I don't know if anybody else remembers this being a thing.
Oh, yes. Sort of, but they used Boomerang to be, were one of the companies that did them, I
think.
That's
the one. So these are Boomerang cards. Ah. And I kept this whole stack of Boomerang cards, and they had this thing where you could, if you were a student artist, you could send your art to be potentially selected to be on the Boomerang cards.
This isn't actually advertising anything. Those were fundamentally advertising cards. Did they just commission these so that there was sort of good stuff amongst the ads?
Absolutely. And I was thinking, because I didn't think I had personal postcards to talk about on this show, apart from the Bantham one. But I had this big stack of Boomerang cards, and I realised, so there's all this sort of student art of variable quality, most of it sort of, yeah, pretty good. Some of it really, really lovely. Some of it just kind of a bum in a tube of netting or something.
Now
I know, right? I should have sent you that one. But you know, the in amongst these were the commercial ones. And I realised back in the day, this is just pre-digital Instagram.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm. It's just hard copy Instagram. And that I just found that kind of fascinating, that something that we think of as incredibly new actually existed, but in a very different format.
And they've
back in 2002.
Almost gone, I think, these advertising cards, haven't they? You do still see them in a few places. You spend your time in a lot of clubs, Ian. Do you, when you're performing, do they have this sort of thing sitting in the lobby? Or
Not so much, I think, but I do remember the Boomerang thing very clearly. And, you know, as during the poverty bits, we used to nick them and make them into postcards and send them off.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you could sort of grab a whole handful. It's so, Martha, the thing that strikes me about this card is actually her footwear, because it's the only thing that kind of puts it in some sort of, I was going to say contemporary context, but of course Converse have been around since the early 20th century, but they're so clear. She's wearing that beautiful olive-coloured Converse footwear, and it sort of gives it a whole new thing, really, because it almost looks like they've been grafted on, doesn't it? They're so clear, aren't they, those Converse trainers?
Oh, yeah.
And without them, it could be Ophelia.
Yeah, indeed.
I was just going to say the rosette, of course. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Beautiful.
It's funny because... Nowadays, if this actually were Instagram, that would be a sponsored post for Converse.
Wouldn't it?
Whereas back in the day, it is, of course, just an image of a woman jumping in. But Converse was so big because this was, we're talking about 1998, 2000. I mean, we're sort of in the post-grunge beginnings of the kind of Blur, height of the Blur Oasis kind of fame era. So, you know, Converse All-Stars, that was just what you wore all the time if you were the right age to be doing that. It's really the sort of peak of
If I'd been an art student and this was my picture that was put on one of these cards, I think I'd have just literally gone to every bar and just taken every single one of them. which would defeat the object because you want them to be disseminated, but I'd just be so excited.
Yeah, you'd be thrilled, wouldn't you?
You would.
Yeah.
You must have had promotional postcards at some stage, Ian?
Yes, I've got some of those. It was my mum that I used to give everything to my mother who died in 2012. So there are boxes and boxes of newspaper cuttings and things from various, you know, Sunday supplements and things that she kept. And it's like going back and thinking, am I actually 87 years old or 58? So these yellowing reviews from the Sunday Times and things. Yeah, but not so much. We have my wonderful manager, Charlotte. She puts cards, mailing list cards on, if I do a cabaret gig, you know, like a couple of hundred people. Well, Sunday I'm doing one, and it's third capacity. I'm lucky to be out there singing, in this time.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so you'll get a little card saying if you'd like to subscribe to Ian's mailing list, which I think is really sweet because that really is something which doesn't really normally happen. It's normally a code from your phone or something.
Yes.
But she still does that, and people like it a lot.
Yes.
And as I get older, I think my fans get older with me, I suppose. I hope, anyway.
Yeah.
It's always nice to see a young couple sitting in the audience sometimes. But yeah, the card thing, I like them. I've my kitchen is awash with all sorts of real things, you know, and I've got two pin boards in there, and they do have cards and things on them. And the house that I live in is made into flats, but we all send each other little cards and leave them in the lobby, and it means
very
a lot.
Good. Yeah. It's nice. I think the music business and publishing business are still big postcard sort of nexuses, because you know, books very often have a promotional postcard that is sent out when they're ready, and I think also you know, albums and even sort of fan club things, but maybe that's less popular now, but there used to be these sort of fan club postcards. And as you said,
the biggest thrill of all was during lockdown was walking into Daunt's a couple of months ago and just standing there with my mask on, fully sanitized from head to toe, but breathing in through my mask the sort of the smell of paper and wood and
the bookshop smell. Yeah. That's very unique. Mm. Yeah, real physical paper things are different from the virtual world, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a slight sort of grim connection with your two cards here, Martha, which is you talked about people sort of drowning in the whirlpools.
Oh, my goodness.
And then
I've got this, the dive-bombing woman. I mean, I'd like to think that she's just dive-bombed and then she's going to bounce back up again out of the water with a big grin on her face, and she's just, you know, like a sort of student, a student prank. You know, there are places where people jump into the water when they've just graduated, kind of thing. So
bloody idiots.
I know. Well, and indeed, that's not necessarily particularly smart, depending on where you do the jump, but only jump where it's deep enough, people.
I guess the joy of the image is we can't tell. We can't tell whether she's coming up again.
Yeah. I like to think she's only got her head down because of the jump, and then she's going to bounce back again. I think so.
Very good, very good. Well, thank you for that one. Now, Ian, we're on to your final card, which I think is looks very conventional to me. A sea, is it a lake or the sea?
Yeah, it's Bermuda.
Is it, by God? Very good.
It's Bermuda, and it was the one and only time that I went there as a piano bar entertainer. Again, sorry to be to keep this thing going, but that was what I was doing. And it was a most peculiar, alien place to me, you know, British colonised and all the rest of it. So it felt like being in deepest Surrey, but with policemen with red shorts and beautiful weather and the whole thing of the Bermuda Triangle hanging over it and incredible food and stuff. But I'll just quickly read it. It's a very short postcard. This is a marvellous place. I'm having a good time and I hope they ask me back again. They didn't. Stuart and Chris and I are having a great laugh. I have no idea who those two men, boys, are. Swimming, drinking and riding around on ridiculous motorbikes. Everybody likes me. I had a night off and I must have eaten something which disagreed with me.
Oh.
Okay, mine are very kind of scatological, aren't they? I'm sorry. I had lunch parties and snorkeling exhibitions. I mean, what was I at this point? Noel Coward?
what a life!
I'm not buying clothes as they're far too expensive. I'll get them in London. I got an okay tan, not very deep, but I'm certainly not as pale as before I came, Mum. Mum and I are sort of quite fair skin. I intend to spend the last week every day on the beach. The boys leave Tuesday and I fly back to London Thursday, so a long phone conversation will ensue, hopefully, from London. Now, the reason why this gave me a chill was because on the penultimate day, I had the most awful motorbike accident and ended up in a coma for 24 hours. And I think it was induced. I hope it was. And then I woke up. I'd gone out and the bar, which was called the King Henry VIII Restaurant, and guess what? There were six waitresses. dressed. Oh, dear. Was it beheaded, survived? I can't remember anyway. Somebody will know this. And I drank Pernod as my goodbye drink. I hadn't had it before and I haven't had it since. And I got on my tiddly little bike. It was hot and I went the wrong way around a roundabout. And the next minute I was halfway down a cliff and I still have the scars on my legs and lips to prove it. And I was woken up very gently by an Irish nurse that I can remember exactly what she said. She said, "Sure, you were like a jam sandwich when we brought you in here." And she said, "We phoned your parents yesterday." And I just thought, oh my God, you phoned my parents. You know, hello, your son's in a coma. This is nurse, you know, Mary, talking from Bermuda General Hospital. So that was the thing that I panicked about the most. And then I had a very, very flashy flight back to London. I was in a lot of pain, but I was okay. You know, I was just sort of bashed around a bit and scarred, and it looked far worse than it was. And I came back, and my luggage followed me a week later. So it was a sort of, when I looked at that card, it gave me a real kind of sense of, oh gosh, never mind me going to, you know, my going to Amsterdam, my dad thinking surely he'll be having prostitutes every 2 hours. No. My poor parents having been told that their son, because my brother died when predeceased me actually, but the whole thing of my brother Gareth hung over the family. So I was kind of,
gosh,
I was a real, you know, gift, I suppose, if you want to look at it like that. So and I also then nearly drowned when I was 3. So my poor, poor parents, having gone through all this, being phoned from Bermuda General Hospital by Julie Andrews.
And who arranged for you to go home? Who made all that happen?
The rest of the gig that I was playing at and my then agent, Jack Fallon, they all kind of, you know, came forward over various long-distance phone calls, and they sorted everything out. They changed my ticket, and they made sure that my luggage. One of the waitresses, in fact, packed all my clothes because I was going to pack the next morning and then whiz off back to Heathrow or something the next evening. But that did not happen. I was in Bermuda for slightly longer than I expected, and I remember getting a very kind of, I felt very important on the aeroplane on the way back because I got they gave me champagne and I was upgraded and my leg was out and I just, you know, I just thought, well, good comes out of bad. and then I couldn't work.
Make the most of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's something about the glassy water in that picture, though. That's clearly the calm before the storm.
Well, yes, and I did find it very. I was there for a month exactly, and I met some extraordinary people. Probably not people that I would generally, I suppose, be drawn to. A lot of kind of what we call expats, you know, whatever that means these days. And very nice people as well. The island thing, the sort of insular thing was very, very apparent there. It was, everything was very limited, you know, tiny, the one tiny post office on, I think it's called Hamilton, isn't it, the capital? And the food was just glorious. I don't eat meat, so it was seafood. So it was a beautiful, beautiful month, the like of which I'd never really experienced. I think I was 21 at that point. And I had a girlfriend. I'm gay. I had a girlfriend. And we were going through all sorts of changes and things, and I was doubting my sexuality. So it was a very kind of potent era for me. And that postcard sort of says it all, really. So as you said, Tom, the blandness of the postcard was the absolute sort of antithesis of what was really going on, what was about to happen, both in my love life and also with my legs and my mouth and my arm and my dislocated shoulder. Wow.
Gosh, it certainly captures a moment, doesn't it? A moment of your life.
You could say that. So I was dive bombing in my own way, Martha, I suppose.
Yeah.
Took Sounds a little like longer. It.
The connections between the cards are becoming slightly alarming. Very good. Oh, well, look, thank you. I'm so glad that you rediscovered that card, actually, because painful though the memories may be, it's part of you, isn't it?
Yeah, my sister sent tons of them because I got completely excited by being invited on this, and I just wanted to get the right ones. And she sent, you know, the picture and the body of the writing, and they were all fairly similar. They're all kind of young and hopeful and wanting to probably. I've never wanted to be a star. I just always wanted to sort of work, really. So they're quite a positive. They're written like it's another person, though. I don't recognise myself at all in those. I was super confident, and yet there's an underlying love me, please, because nobody listened. Nobody listened. I played and sang, and not that many people listened for 5 years.
Yes, and you are quite well. You were one was quite cut off when you were abroad in those days. So that postcard, you could pour a bit more out onto it. Now you're so much more connected. If only that you see the news and that you can see what people are up to on social media and stuff. Yeah. You were cut off.
You were, and it made it rather special and unique, but it also made it very alienating. And at that age, between, 19 and, 19 and 24 was my period of doing these bars, it was quite discombobulating at times and very temporary. I'd go somewhere for a month or two months and maybe meet someone, maybe fall in love a bit with someone or get up to all sorts of adventures. And then almost, it reminds me when I do a theatre piece, a play as an actor, you've got this really intense kind of period of work and then you perform it. And then, we must keep in touch, let's do a keep in touch. You never do. You just don't. You only come across things by accident, again. Oh, yes, do you remember we were in that thing together? So, yes, you are cut off. And, there's good and bad with the immediacy of social media, I think, and the immediacy of WhatsApp and knowing when someone is online and panicking if they're online and they haven't answered you and things. None of that was there. It was an age of simplicity, really. But I suppose you can say that with every zeitgeisty passing moment, can't you?
Yeah, though I think the technology, the technological changes we're in now in the digital world are big ones.
Mm.
I think they are big ones. I think they are changing a lot of things about our brains and communication. But you can't do much about them. So you kind of have to work. You have to navigate them. You can't.
You do, and they slightly malign trust as well. I've found recently. They do. They give you a whole different perspective. There's a darkness about, the famous WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger or these things that we're all involved in, whether we like it or not. Even my sister, who I'm not joining any of that nonsense. Yes, right. Yes, look, there's a picture of your dinner. Didn't get there by accident.
Well, that's brilliant. Look, Ian, thank you so much for sharing that, quite resonant, painful card. Really, pleasure. Really interesting. And thank both of you for sharing your cards. I always say the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. It's really good that you share them with me and with each other and with the listeners. Another reminder for people at home, Images of these cars will be available on the website, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see the girl with her Converse, you can see the placid waters before Ian's accident, you can see, you see them all. Including this last one, which I would normally hand over to the pair of you to have a look at, but I can just wave at you. It's a card that is a sort of square postcard in pink, so you can see it in front of you. And I can't exactly ask you to look at it in any detail, but I can describe to the viewers. It's a card which is actually made of plastic. It's not made of cardboard. But it is a postcard because on the back it has actually sort of etched into it that dividing line you get down a postcard, and a lines for an address and a line for a square for a stamp. And it says 14 zloty for the stamp. So I guess it's more than usual. And on the front, you can't see this. Obviously, you can see there's a hole in it, and it's a postcard record. If I ask young Tom, who's back at Wardour Studios HQ, very nicely, he might be able to press some buttons and make something happen, then we can hear it. And it starts with talking, this one.
Zdrowych, wesołych świąt wielkanocnych. Miłemu koledze Piotrkowi z rodziną przesyła z Polski Zygmunt z rodziną.
So that bit was a dedication, and it said, "Wishing my dear friend Peter and family a healthy and happy Easter." So it's been personalised in a shop.
Wow!
I'm not sure this is quite your style of singing, Ian, but it could be.
I'm loving it.
It's a Polish song from the war, called "The Poppies of Monte Cassino." Very patriotic song about the battle in Italy.
I think I had relatives posting in Italy. In fact, my great-great-grandfather was unhappy because one of my great-aunts, who was in Italy, seemed to be getting involved with an unsuitable male.
Oh, yes.
And so he sent a message to one of his sons, who was posted in Turkey, I think, and said, "You need to go to Italy to sort your sister out and stop her from marrying this man." And of course, I mean, the idea, they had no way of explaining to him that there was no way they could, that, you know, the Second World War is going on. We cannot just leave our posting in Turkey and go to Italy and sort my sister out, even if we were so inclined. This is not a thing we can do.
Well, family business is important to sort, you know.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. We can't have any of that going on. Yeah, so wow. There we go.
Well, as the pink flowers continue to rotate at exactly 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Martha Lawton and Ian Shaw. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Wonderful.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. See more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book Postcard from the Past by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right.
because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.